Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, August 27th. As my state of New Jersey prepares for Hurricane Irene to deliver the great flood, seeing as how the ground in these parts is already saturated from about 10 inches of rain the previous week and power failures, one can only hope that the storm's wrath doesn't deliver a depressing knockout punch when it comes to consumer and business confidence, because it's confidence that is so lacking in supply these days around much of the world. About the only guy who seems confident is Warren Buffett, who was playing with his rubber ducky in his bathtub Wednesday morning when he came up with the idea of making an offer to Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan, a deal Moynihan could have refused. But the out-of-his-league Moynihan was so starstruck to be talking to Buffett for the first time, you just know he called his co-workers into the office, covered the phone, and said giddily, "I'm talking to Warren Buffett." "What's he want?" one of the workers would have said. "I don't know, but how great is this?" Well, just days after Moynihan told investors B of A didn't need any more capital, even though everyone knows they do, he gladly took $5 billion from Buffett, but is on the hook to the Berkshire Hathaway chairman for a 6% annual dividend plus a big gob of warrants already priced below the week's closing share price. Buffett then covered the mouthpiece of his phone, called in his associates, and told them, "I can't believe this schmuck is taking the deal." Then again, the move was such a shock and done so quickly that when one analyst went on CNBC and said, "Well, of course Mr. Buffett's people have been looking at B of A's books and know the risk," I'm thinking, no, they didn't. And what did we learn late Friday? Bank of America is indeed frantically trying to raise more capital. It's a mess. America is a mess. The world is a mess. And while it appears Mr. Buffett is getting a great deal, and maybe he is, this is the same guy who just the other day said the United States is a quadruple A nation. Two Nobel Prize winning economists from opposite ends of the political spectrum, Michael Spence and Joseph Stiglitz, both said this week that the risk of the global economy slipping back into recession are high. Spence told Bloomberg while in Hong Kong, "I'm quite worried. Combined downward dip in Europe and America, which is a good chunk of the industrialized economies, I'm quite sure we'll take down growth in China particularly, and that will then immediately spread to the rest of the emerging economies." Joseph Stiglitz, speaking from Germany, said of the U.S. economy, "The unemployment situation is very severe and very probably going to get worse. There's a very high probability we'll go into double dip." Stiglitz, the liberal, said calls by policymakers to engage in deficit-cutting austerity measures were heading in exactly the wrong direction. "Austerity is going to get us predictably into trouble," he said. Spence adds, "We must get hold of the soaring deficits to begin to reinstill confidence." I'm sorry, let me just back that up, that the difference between Stiglitz was austerity is going to get us predictably into trouble, while Spence says we must get hold of the soaring deficits to begin to reinstill confidence. Just to make that distinction clear, on Friday morning, the first revision of second quarter GDP in the U.S. showed the economy was growing at an annual rate of 1% versus the previous flash figure of 1.3%. This after the first quarter revision of 0.4% sent the whole current phase of the financial crisis in motion. The economy is dead in the water. But just 90 minutes later, there was Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke in his much-awaited Jackson Hole speech saying that while a dead housing market and financial market volatility still pose challenges, his view of the long-term outlook is, quote, more optimistic. Bernanke said, "Although important problems certainly exist, the growth fundamentals of the United States do not appear to have been permanently altered by the shocks of the past 4 years. It may take some time, but we can reasonably expect to see a return to growth rates and employment levels consistent with those underlying fundamentals." Charlie Brown was heard to sigh, "Good grief." There was one decent piece of economic news this week in July's reading on durable goods, big ticket items, up a better than expected 4%. But this is a notoriously volatile figure, and you'd want to see at least one more similar reading to make much of it. On the flip side, July new home sales were putrid, like you could count them on two hands. Meanwhile, before we get to Europe, the news out of Washington was light, with the president and family up on Martha's Vineyard and Congress on break. No cheap jokes on either in this regard, but the Congressional Budget Office did have some awful news, not unexpected, mind you, that the unemployment rate would be no better than 8.5% by December 2012, and that the deficit for fiscal 2011 through September 30th will still be $1.3 trillion. Which is down from the January forecast of $1.48 trillion because tax receipts have been better than forecast, though a look at the recent turmoil in the financial markets and increased layoff news should lead one to believe the surprise on the receipts front will be to the downside the coming year. The CBO is calling for a deficit of $973 billion in fiscal 2012, which I would guess goes up unless the economy does much better than the CBO projects. For example, the CBO's GDP forecast for 2011 is 2.3%, which means the second half has to be much better than we've seen, while they are calling for 2.7% growth in 2012, both numbers far better than current consensus. Boy, I hope they're right. Really, I'm not short the market. I want everyone to do well, but I don't see it, especially given what's happening in Europe. This was the last week for the continent's traditional August holiday, but from a financial standpoint, what an August it's been, with the German stock market crashing 20% this month alone. And this weekend, Greece is back in the forefront of discussion as two-year note yields on Greece scrip soared to 47%. Greek banks are having major short-term funding issues, borrowing from their government to meet daily cash needs, while the government sells some antiquities. I'm guessing they're now being little else of value here. But the immediate issue for the weekend and next week is that Greece bailout 2 is in serious jeopardy because the Finns, Austrians, and others are now demanding collateral for any money lent the Greeks. This totally flies in the face of the intent of the bailout. It is also predictable in that it was going to be impossible to keep all Euro 17 nations together on the second giveaway. The politicians are simply under too much pressure from a people, be they Finns or Austrians or Germans, who have had it with bailing out the irresponsible black sheep in the family. I've told you the real key is the European Financial Stability Fund, now slated at 440 billion euro, which could backstop Greece, Ireland, and Portugal, maybe, but which needs to be expanded to a second fund of 500 billion euro to backstop Italy and Spain in order to engender confidence that the EU and the European Central Bank finally have control of the crisis. One problem. It's my understanding the initial 440 billion euro isn't technically funded yet, let alone no one is confident today that the needed second 500 billion will ever pass muster with 17 parliaments, and time is wasting. Greece, for example, has huge funding needs coming up in September, and now there is all this turmoil over short-term collateral from the likes of Finland. Which brings us to Germany, 30% of the Euro 17 economy, and the one nation that must lead the rest out of crisis. But German Chancellor Angela Merkel is not up to the job and is facing an increasing revolt within her own party, including from former Chancellor and mentor Helmut Kohl. Kohl said this week that nobody seemed to know in what direction Germany was headed anymore. Kohl said the EU must stand by Greece no matter what and castigated Merkel for constantly changing her position. The enormous changes in the world can be no excuse for having no view or idea where you belong and where you are going, said Kohl. Then one of Merkel's own ministers said that Germany should ask Greece and others requiring bailouts for collateral too, just like the Finns are demanding. Well, that was hardly helpful. Moody's ratings agency said demanding collateral only drives Greece into default, which some agree is what should happen, but it must be on the EU's terms and orderly should it come to this. So amid all the above, Europe's economy has stalled out. The Euro Manufacturing Index, PMI, for August fell below the 50 dividing line between expansion and contraction, 49.7 for the first time since September 2009, as worrisomely new export orders dropped. The services PMI for August fell to 51.5. France, looking to keep its AAA rating, enacted a $16 billion austerity program that called for scrapping some tax exemptions, levying new sin taxes, and applying a 3% surcharge on incomes above $700,000, which, imaginatively, will then be scrapped when the budget deficit gets back down to 3% of GDP from the current 6%. At least French President Sarkozy took some bold steps, but not too bold, such as further job cuts, because he faces a bitter re-election contest in just 8 months. As for Europe's banks, none of them trust each other, and the critical funding mechanism between rivals continues to threaten to totally break down at a moment's notice, which would literally lead to a catastrophic run on the bank. At least Wall Street rallied after the dreadful action of the preceding 4 weeks, and these solid gains were based on just two bits of news that were way overinterpreted: the durable goods figure, and then Chairman Bernanke's misguided optimism at Jackson Hole. Oh well, I will concede this much. If you believe the economy will somehow muddle through at 1% to 2% growth for the next 18 months or so, stocks are not overvalued. If you believe we are going to double dip, as classically defined, two negative quarters of growth in a row, then there is further downside. For now, however, there is nothing to turn around the crisis in confidence, and events like Irene only provide more fuel for the negative feedback loop that continues to infect much of the globe. This week, the Dow Jones rose 4.3% to 11,284, while the S&P 500 gained 4.7% and NASDAQ soared 5.9%, though all three are still down solidly for the year. And just a comment from Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal on the resignation of Apple's Steve Jobs. Mr. Jobs is a historic business figure whose impact was felt far beyond the company's Cupertino, California headquarters, and who is widely emulated at other companies. And now, for the first time since 1997, he won't be CEO. CEOs resign every day, so why is this one so meaningful? Most people are lucky if they can change the world in one important way, but Mr. Jobs, in multiple stages of his business career, changed global technology and media in multiple ways on multiple occasions. And that changed the way people live. Mossberg continues, he did it because he was willing to take big risk on new ideas and not be satisfied with small innovations fed by market research. He insisted on high quality and had the guts to leave out features others found essential and to kill technologies like the floppy drive and the removable battery. And he has been a brilliant marketer, personally passionate about his products. Today, Apple's the most financially valuable and influential technology company in the world, whose every product is eagerly anticipated, snapped up quickly by consumers, and aped by competitors, even though they are often priced higher than rival devices. While CEO of the revived Apple, post-1997, he introduced the dominant digital music player, the iPod, and created the most successful digital media service, iTunes. He introduced the first super smartphone, the iPhone, and the only truly successful tablet computer, the iPad, which is in the process of replacing the laptop, at least in part. He built the world's largest app store. One almost forgets that he built a phenomenally successful chain of retail stores, too. Jobs has dramatically changed the mobile phone industry, the music industry, the film and TV industries, the publishing industry, and others. That was Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal. I would just add that, as Ronald Reagan would have said, not bad, not bad at all. And that's all for this week. For further details, go to stocksandnews.com. Click on Week in Review. Hope you have a good one. For those in the Northeast, hope we all weather Hurricane Irene with minimal damage. And I'll be back with you next Saturday.